Hello and a very warm welcome to today's show. Today we're going to be looking at the question of virtues, values, ethics and morality. My name is Magla Pillay and I have in the studio with me today Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation for over 40 years. The subject that we are taking up today is non-conventional value system. The method of inquiry that we're going to be using is called the Socratic method, and that is a manner of putting questions to someone or group of individuals in order to elicit a truth that is understandable by all rational human beings. The purpose of today's show is to look at conventional values, to look at the way human beings think and function, and also to question the way people are and whether it works for us in today's world. Sister Denise, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
Could you tell us why the subject is of interest to you and how is it relevant to the times in which we find ourselves?
Well, we have the two. We have conventional value systems, and then what I'm interested in is the non-conventional value systems. So conventional value systems are the ones that we all grew up with, that everyone is familiar with, and they're based on the idea of the fundamental paradigm of materialism, which means that everyone is either a man or a woman. So conventional value systems, they have one set of values for males and a slightly different set of values that apply to females, which means that there's a fundamental inequity factored into the value system, so that when people are interested in equal pay for equal work, it is a problem because the value system mitigates against it. There are other areas of law, areas of different kind of rights, children, conjugal rights, all these type of things. It's different if you're a man or if you're a woman. Whereas non-conventional values would be values based on spirituality, which means that we are not either men or women. The bodies are, but the self who inhabits the body is a genderless person. And because of that, there is no foundation for making a differentiation based on gender in terms of values. That means that everybody is actually treated equally in terms of rights, in terms of responsibilities. Of course, there are differences in the roles, but there are areas of fundamental rights and also areas where you're looking at the actual value of a person. Whether you're in a male body or a female body, you are valuable because you are a person. And there are some cultures which honor that, but most cultures really make a big difference, which means that it's actually not possible to carry the idea of spiritual values very far because it gets blocked by the materialist paradigm. So non-conventional values also means that a person will think about themselves differently. They will not think, well, I'm a woman, therefore I'm of lower value, or I'm a man, therefore I'm of higher value. You see, that syllogism couldn't work. I'm a human being and therefore I have value. That goes across the board.
does that mean when you speak of conventional value system, is there need in humanity right now for a new value system to emerge? Because has the old one failed humanity?
Well, I think it has.
In what way?
Well, take another angle. Being of a particular religion doesn't automatically mean that the people of any other religion are of less value.
Okay.
But if you come from the angle that if you are of a particular religion, and if there's anybody who is of a different religion, then they are automatically of lower value, or it applies also where there is caste system, class differentiation, all of the differentiations based on creed, gender, color, all of these things is based in the materialist paradigm. And what spirituality says is that those differentiations are based on falsehood, because it's not true that the body color changes your value. It's not true that the gender changes your value. It's not true that the caste changes your value. You see what I'm saying? Your value is associated with your being, the soul. Now, you bring in the idea of karma. Every soul takes birth in better or less good circumstances, which reflects their karma. Those external material considerations don't really reflect a variation in value. What changes the value of a person is the quality of their action. So that, you know, if a person is doing less good action, anyway the laws of karma are going to come in and cause that person to have to pay in some way, and so the quality of their life will be reduced by that. But the way that we interact with another human being has to be based on the inner qualities rather than external, physical, visible, cultural, or other such considerations, you see. And nowadays, you have so much negative behavior towards people, including wars. You know, there are many wars, and people are getting killed and tortured and mutilated on the basis of their race or their religion or their political affiliation, you see. Now, everybody has a right to whatever those things are. It doesn't make you suitable to be damaged by somebody else who judges you to be unfit or you should be killed because of this or that. No. When a person performs antisocial action, that antisocial action creates an issue with the local law, but then even the laws themselves, they need to be equitable, not biased against minorities or biased against people because of their cultural or religious or ethnic identity.
Mm. So, Denise, you shared something very beautiful, that the value of an individual rests in their being and not in the external. Why is, what comes to mind is that that would be an antidote to almost every problem in the world. Why is that understood by so few, if it's such a universally applicable principle?
A number of reasons. One reason is you have to have power, inner power to understand it, inner spiritual power to understand it. Secondly, you have to go against the grain, which not everybody is able to do. Most people are not willing to do because it costs so much to go against the grain. And so I think that we're at a time where the current is changing direction. So that the current so far has been leading everybody down the path of materialism, which I feel has enhanced human suffering and confusion and difficulties. And now it seems to be turning, going the other way, towards the direction of spirituality. But I think there have to be something rather like what is called imaginal cells. Do you know about imaginal cells?
No.
When a caterpillar spins a cocoon and sits in the cocoon, and then all of a sudden something happens. So what the biologists have found is that just before the butterfly has to happen, there are these little imaginal cells that create that image of the butterfly, and they cause it to happen very, very quickly. So I feel that this is quite a suitable analogy, that those of us who do naturally go against the conventional current and who have a substantial foundation of goodness for doing that, they in a way are acting like imaginal cells for a transformation that I feel is taking place in humanity. And it doesn't need very many to make that change, but the ones who do make that change, they have to be very clear, very strong, and their vision of where things are going is so clear in their minds that they just go, and that everyone else is drawn to that, in spite of reactions and resistance. You know, the current of materialism, extremism, and so on has reached a maximum, and the imaginal cell people are, you know, shifting it and making it go in the other direction. And I think it doesn't take many people to do this. They just have to be very clear, very strong in their sense of who they are, and that their vision of where to go is also very clear.
Sister Denise, you use the expression materialistic paradigm often. What is your working definition of that?
Well, the materialistic paradigm means that everything that is matter is real, and anything that you can't see, touch, measure, you know, make contact with through your five senses, anything that doesn't fit there doesn't exist. Whereas the paradigm of spirituality says that there is matter, no doubt, and there is another dimension, which is the dimension of the spirit, which you cannot neglect, because the actual person who is performing action in the material world is a spiritual being, and there are laws of spirituality that govern everyone who's conscious. And the way in which they interact with each other, with matter, and also with the divine supreme being. And if you say that that dimension doesn't exist, then the kind of actions you do will lead you to something of a disaster, because you're just not taking into consideration very important energies, powers, and realities.
You mentioned earlier that where people consider themselves to be male or female and are judged on all the things that the standards by which human beings judge others, and then taking it further to seeing the person from inside rather than external. I get the sense as you were speaking that the way humanity judges each other and categorizes people has caused them quite a bit of damage. Can we come back from that damage? Because it causes, it has hurt a lot of what you said, that has been true for so many people for such a long time, has caused so much of pain. And how does one come back from that? How does one recover from that to embrace what you just said?
Well, partly it's study. And you will study these ideas, you will study the concepts of spirituality when you find that the materialist concept or paradigm just doesn't work for you. It will trigger some sort of a search for something to replace it. Because once something doesn't work for you, you need something that does work, and you will not stop until you find it. So then a lot of people are in search.
A lot of people may be searching, but they're searching for the wrong, in the wrong place, for the wrong things. And as a Denise, you'll find that a lot of people would want to embrace what you are saying, okay? But for example, I've heard once that if somebody has experienced a trauma, that trauma becomes part of their identity. Okay, now you are a non-conventional value system offers an alternative and a real identity as opposed to a false one. But we do hold on to our weaknesses, don't we? How do you let go of that and embrace something new?
The weaknesses hold on to us.
Oh, really?
So you have a trauma that's holding you in a vice grip. It's putting you into survival mode, which means that you are getting more and more full of character defects. You're in pain, you're causing pain, you're in like the jail of this vice, which is what happens when you integrate a trauma into your life. And for you to come out of it means you have to go through the initial pain. And so for that, you have to have enormous personal power, because it's very painful to come out through the same way you went in.
Ouch.
Now, there may be a better way to do it, but in my experience, that is a way that I know works, and I haven't really come across an easier way.
It takes obviously courage to face that.
Well, courage is a good virtue, and the power to face is one of the powers that comes to you when you meditate. So the whole thing is a matter of accumulation, and then you get insights along the way. And as the right moment comes, where you've got enough courage, enough insight, and it's, okay, today I'll do it. And then you move. You might not move very far, but you do move some little way. And it may be incremental, but you're on your way. And that, I think, is the key.
If somebody embraces what you just said, because it sounds so incredibly beautiful and so healing, it's the feeling that I get from what you're saying is it's almost like therapy, because it brings a sense of healing to be liberated from your own personal prison, as it were. It requires a lot of self-work to establish a new spiritual identity, doesn't it? Because the old identity of thinking, not even being arrogant, not even I'm my job, but I'm female, is so deep-seated. It's so deep-seated that when you're, for example, say if you find yourself in a swimming pool drowning, then you would fight to save your life because this is what you think you are. My question is, what level of effort does one require to establish this new identity, to establish a non-conventional value system and let go of the old one?
The old one is a shell, a mask, which you became fused with. And so you become confused, And you have to practice what we call bodilessness. When you practice to be bodiless, you can actually separate yourself from this mask that you fused with, which became your substitute identity. And once that happens, it's able to fall away. Because you become clear that it's a mask, it's not me. And it's done its duty. Almost like when a house is getting built, there's scaffolding to, you know, enable the different workers to work on the different parts of the house, but then when it's ready, then you take down the scaffolding. So in the same way, you are on the inside recreating your original being. The scaffolding that is there, that's necessary while you're building the inner beautiful home, the identity, that scaffolding, after a while, it has to be taken down because it's no longer relevant and is ugly, you see. So a friend of mine was working on themselves in this, and what she said is she experienced disgust with that false identity, and that disgust was a very important trigger mechanism to drop the false mask because it was disgusting.
So it was that her motivation.
And also, she said, you cannot, fault anyone else for putting you in that spot. You put yourself in that spot. And when you're disgusted with your own self for doing what is not good for you, that can make you stop doing it.
This obviously requires a lot of internal work. What about your life on the outside? And by that I mean, if you're doing all of this internal work of reestablishing your identity and embracing non-conventional values, what happens to your relationships with other people, your relationship with your body, your responsibilities? Because you're going through some massive shift, and your life outside can't possibly stay the same?
No, it does shift. I think it's very good to have these inner changes, and of course it disturbs the outside, and it may take a little while before you settle into a new sense of identity that is the right thing, that corresponds with who you are. But when you're in the state of becoming, it may not be comfortable, it may not look very good, but you have to be patient and trusting. Trust the process and take yourself through, and you find that yes, it starts to reform itself in a way that corresponds much better to the real person that you are.
Sister Denise, one would find that when you're changing internally, embracing non-conventional values internally, then on the outside, there can be certain behavioral patterns that are difficult to change. For example, if one has an addiction to something or someone, and then now on listening to your inspiring talk, somebody now decides to relook at themselves, the soul, and yet there's a conflict of behavior outside. How does one...
It wouldn't work like that.
How would it work?
If you have an addiction, that addiction is going to take you to a very uncomfortable point in your life, which will be the trigger for the change. So you won't figure out that you've got an addiction after you've been changing. The addiction and the way that it fails you so completely is the trigger to really relook at your life. So in that sense, it works the other way around.
It's now become very common to hear of people in your immediate space who have a whole number of mental afflictions that was unheard of 20 years ago. Like, I know a lot of people who are bipolar. I know a lot of adults who have ADHD. Adults, not children. These are actual medical problems of the mental kind. How does one embrace what you said if faced with that level of challenge?
I think that we have to look at also the fact that in earlier times there was a very extreme prejudice against anyone with mental illness. So anybody who has some discomfort internally in their mind, they will hide it. They will do everything to hide it because they will not want to be classified as somebody who's mentally ill, because that's worse than being criminal. So now it's the prejudice against mental illness has shifted, and it's now just part of the continuum of ailments, and you can go for therapy, it's quite acceptable, and then you learn things and you maybe take medication and so on and so forth to alleviate that difficulty. But to recover with or without drugs, psychotropic drugs, from a mental illness is a big journey and a lot of work, and in a way you need to be very strong to do that. So meditation can be helpful, but on the other hand, depending on the nature of the problem, meditation can even make it worse, because you become too disconnected from the reality. So because meditation does take you to a detached state, but if you're already disconnected, then meditation is not a useful thing to do. You have to get connected and then detach. So
I'm sorry, connected to what and detached from what?
Connected to the material world and all the responsibilities and realities of the material world, and then to become detached but not dissociated. You see, a lot of people, they think dissociation and detachment is the same thing, but not at all.
Denise, the paradox that I'm picking up is you saying that in order to do this, you need to be very strong. In order to do this, you're very strong. What if your primary weakness is the fact that you're a weak person? And so how do you do this then?
Anyway, everyone is running on empty, spiritually depleted. But you may have a capacity that is greater than someone else's. So once you start filling through meditation, maybe you just keep filling, and you find that your capacity to fill is very large. And that indicates that you are a very strong person. But when you're empty, spiritually empty, you may not even realize it until you start to fill. There are people who fill but only to a limited amount, and so they only go to that far, and everyone is different, you know.
Okay. Well, Sister Denise, I think that brings us to the end of today's show. Non-conventional values, ladies and gentlemen, a very interesting subject and not something that you hear every day. And as you see, Sister Denise has shared with us as to how applicable and necessary it has become to embrace this way of thinking. I hope that what you heard today is something that you can put into your life, and I do hope that it works for you. Sister Denise, thank you very much for an extremely informative half an hour, and we will see all of you again soon. Thank you and goodbye.